Welcome, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Roslevy. I'm here with you every Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. It's great to be with you every week and to talk about all of the things that affect our health, our personal health, which includes the health of our food, the health of our water and air, the health of our communities, the health of our society, and the health of the planet Earth, which is our natural habitat. We discuss all of those things and many more every week on Connect the Dots, and it's a great delight to be with you every week, as well as with our whole series of terrific guests that are knowledgeable about the many different facets of our world that impact our health. As regular listeners to this show know, I usually begin each program with an invitation to take action. Right now, the big action is to tell New York State Governor Cuomo that New Yorkers don't want fracking in their state. And in fact, that's the case. The majority don't. The more they know about it, the less they like it. The organization that we're going to be featuring on today's show, and I'm so delighted to have them, it's their first guest appearance on Connect the Dots, even though we've been in conversation in the real world over years, actually, is a terrific group where you can take action and where today you'll learn more about fracking and what's going on with it in New York State. They're called Frack Action. They're one of the very first organizations that has been building the swell of movement and activism around the fracking issue in the Northeast region. One of the very early groups that organized and started holding rallies and gathering people and raising awareness, and they're a terrific group. They're very involved as well in New York State voters against New Yorkers against fracking, which is an important coalition of all of the groups that have been working so hard to protect our air, our water, organic food, and all of the rest of it. Just briefly, wanted to draw your attention before a first of two guests that will be appearing on today's show from Frack Action join me. There was recently in Tree Hugger a terrific article called Fracking Could Ruin New York's Organic Food Industry. As many listeners know, I'm actually one of the early journalists to break the story on fracking. I did so on the Huffington Post, where I regularly report. You can follow my blogs there under Allison Rose Levy. I'm also going to begin to report with Alternet, so look for me there soon. And I've been a longtime health advocate, reporter, and foodie. I've written several best-selling health and diet and nutrition books with nutritional leaders like Joseph Mercola and Sally Fallon of the Weston A. Price Foundation, and I'm currently actually working on my own book, which is about the kinds of things we cover on this show. But food is really foundational to nourishment and to life. There are many people who regard food as the mainstay of their health. Many listeners to this program, I'm sure, do so. But I bet many of all of you that care about eating healthy food and care about organic food did not realize that New York State is the third largest producer of organic foods in the United States. And there are actually 1,600 organic farms in the state, which could be at risk of losing their organic status if fracking comes to New York State, as New York's Governor Cuomo is planning imminently to open wide for the gas and oil industry and bring it here. And that's because fracking and the heavy industrial-grade chemicals, they keep downgrading them so they don't have to really regulate them properly or dispose of them properly. But this is industrial waste that's used to frack. Those chemicals are then left over, millions and millions of gallons of them, and many of them do infiltrate into streams and ponds and water aquifers, and thereby can come to farms, to farm animals, to rainwater that rains down on farms. And this jeopardizes the organic status of many of the farms in New York State. And many of the farmers and food suppliers and growers are very, very, very concerned about the risk to their food. So I just wanted to draw your attention to this new facet. We've talked about food before. We've had the head of the Brooklyn Food Coalition on the show. And so this is, you know, a lot of people think, oh, it's going on up there. It doesn't affect me. It's going here or there in someone else's neighborhood. You know, the famous not in my backyard concern. Well, if you eat healthy food, if you eat organic food, anywhere in the U.S., this could be a big concern. So I'm just flagging that particular coverage, because we're going to be talking about activism all throughout the rest of the program. So I've kind of reversed our usual structure here in the show, where I give an action first, because we're going to be talking action with Frack Action. So I'd like to welcome to Connect the Dots our first of two guests who will be joining me from Frack Action. He is John Armstrong. He's the communications director, and he's going to update us on some breaking new developments in terms of what's happening in New York State, as well as giving us an overall picture on the many ways that New Yorkers, upstate, downstate, in the regions where fracking is happening, anywhere in the state or northeast region, can be affected if this practice is allowed by Governor Cuomo. Welcome to Connect the Dots, John.
Allison, thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. I am a huge fan of your organization. You know, you've been kind of gathering the crowd and the movement and young people and inspiring people to get active and join in and really create a movement around this. And the energy and dedication, of the many people, more and more all the time, who are groundswelling
against
this.
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, I appreciate that. Frack Action has been working on this in New York for over 2 years now, building up a statewide effort to go for an entire ban on fracking. Early on, we realized that there's no way that fracking can be done safely. It's impossible to do this practice without jeopardizing the health, the environment, the jobs, the well-being of New Yorkers across the state, whether it's the southern tier out by Niagara Falls in the western part of the state or the tip of Long Island. People will all be affected. The impacts will be felt by all. And as such, the only reasonable, the only rational thing to do in New York State is to ban fracking outright. So early on, Frack Action sees that mission and has been working in all parts of the state to bring together grassroots organizers, activists, to build the movement, to educate, but also really to bring people to take action, just like you talk about on the show, to attend rallies, to make phone calls to your legislators, to the governor, to go to hearings, to get their local towns to ban fracking, essentially whatever they can do across the state to get closer and closer to what we ultimately need, which is a statewide ban.
New York is a turnkey state. It's not only that millions more people, you know, when they began to frack in outlying areas of Wyoming or Oklahoma, not to denigrate these areas, but these were very unpopulated areas where this practice first was initiated. In some cases, they were, state wildlife areas, unfortunately. But now, with moving to New York, we have major populations that could be impacted, as well as the center of industry, of the communication industry, of the financial industry. All of these different things are concentrated in this northeast region. So New York is the opportunity either to, you know, send a strong message and say, not at our borders, and turn this back, or to really put large populations at potential risk. How risky? I think people tend to think, before we get on to talk about the areas that Governor Cuomo has hinted that he is going to begin fracking with, one of the mottos of this pushback has been, not in my backyard, not in anyone's backyard. Why should listeners who don't reside in the areas that are potentially being considered, according to his Governor Cuomo's plan that he leaked a couple of months ago to the New York Times, which may have undergone change since then, in any case, why should people that don't reside in those regions be concerned?
Well, that's exactly what you're getting at, in that the impacts of fracking, sure, they'll be in people's backyards. There'll be drill rigs and there'll be truck traffic and all of that in certain parts of the state where the most of the drilling will happen. But then there are so many more impacts that will be felt across the board. For example, air quality. We've seen in other states, as you've mentioned, like Wyoming, for instance, regions of the state go from this pristine, pure mountain air to air quality that's worse than Los Angeles or downtown L.A. on a bad day. That distinct shift in air quality in a shorter period is 5 to 10 years. When we think about that air quality, we think about New York State. If the majority of the fracking is happening in the southern tier, well, that bad air, that smog, those pollutants, those carcinogenic chemicals that are just sort of floating around their towns there, they don't stay there. The wind is just going to blow that air across the rest of the state. To New York City, for instance, much of our wind actually does travel east. So New York City could be impacted by the air quality, as could every other part of the state. And then for New York City, while we're on that topic, another major concern is radon. The Marcellus Shale, the shale underneath the southern part of New York State, is actually highly radioactive, about 70 times more radioactive than most other shales in the country. There's a lot of uranium, radium, and radon down there. Now, radon is a huge concern, and I think you've talked about this in the program before, but just to quickly give an overview, radon is a benign gas, so to speak, essentially. And in its high levels of radon down in the Marcellus Shale, when you frack down there and you actually bring up the little tiny bubbles of methane, which is what natural gas is, traveling with that methane is actually a tremendous amount of radon that'll come right up out of the ground through the pipelines and then can actually travel with the methane, the natural gas, in the pipelines to its final place of use, wherever it's going to be combusted. Now, if it's combusted in a kitchen in New York City or in Syracuse or Albany or even in Massachusetts, wherever that is, then when that natural gas is burnt at the stove, for instance, unfortunately the radon doesn't get burnt off, and the radon just spews out of your kitchen stove right onto your food. It accumulates in on your counters, and you breathe it right in. Your children breathe it right in, and that radon then ends up in your lungs. Now, aside from the Marcellus Shale being so much more radioactive than other shales, another concern with fracking in New York and the impacts of radon is that there's actually very little distance between the point where it's drilled and then the point where it would be used in New York City, for instance, and radon actually dissipates over time. So if it had to travel for 3 months or a month, it would be less toxic to your health. But since it would only travel for a few days, the majority of the radiation that's part of that radon would still be there at the point where it entered your apartment or your home or wherever it ends up going. And as such, these incredibly high levels of radon can end up right in your home and in your lungs. Now, radon, if viewers don't know, radon is actually the leading cause of lung cancer among non-smokers. So the EPA has raised this an enormous concern, having increased rates of radon in your homes, which is why you often get your home tested for radon when you buy it, if you buy a home. But in that same light, in the natural gas that would travel to people's homes from New York State would potentially have these incredible quantities of radon traveling with it that would pose perhaps thousands of, it would end up creating thousands of deaths as a result of increased rates of lung cancer.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good explanation. So, and in fact, many apartment buildings in New York under New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg's plan are being set up to be converted to use this specific kind of gas, both for cooking fuel, as you mentioned, and also for heating fuel. So this is, you know, this is being converted and it could be coming right into your home, even though you live miles and miles and miles away.
It's an invisible killer that most people aren't aware of. And this, just to tie it into where fracking stands in New York right now, the DEC has done this enormous review of fracking that produced a 1,500-page document. That's a document that weighs 15 pounds, three reams of paper, in which there was one sentence to address this problem with radon. It was that naturally occurring radioactive materials in the Marcellus Shale, of those, radon is the primary health concern.
Mm-hmm.
However, in that entire 1,500-page document, there was not another sentence dedicated to radon. It just noted that radon was a major concern, but didn't actually address that.
Mm-hmm.
When the EPA reviewed the document, they highlighted that this was a serious issue. And as far as we know, there's still been no study done. And in fact, there's probably no way to mitigate this problem, which is one of the examples of why ultimately we just need to ban this practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a strong case for it. So tell me, John, where are we now? Give our listeners a kind of a background and a current update, because I know it changes continually, you know, moment by moment. Where things now stand, you know, for listeners that are completely unfamiliar with this, in terms of Governor Cuomo's hinted plan and where things now stand for New York State in that regard.
Sure. And cut me off if I go into too much detail here.
Mm-hmm.
But As most of your listeners most likely know, New York has this de facto moratorium on fracking until the review of fracking by the Department of Environmental Conservation has been completed. That review is what produced the 1,500-page document I referred to, which is the Supplemental Generic Environmental Impact Statement, or the ESGEIS. That ESGEIS is still under review. Between September and January of this past year, going into this year, the public submitted over 66,000 comments, the vast majority of them opposed to fracking. Since January, the Department of Environmental Conservation has been reviewing those comments and updating this ESGEIS. Now, I can get into more details about the ESGEIS later, but so listeners understand where the process is, because of the de facto moratorium, which stems from an executive order, there can be no fracking, no horizontal fracking in New York until that time the ESGEIS has been completed. Once the ESGEIS is released, then New York State can conceivably start issuing permits for horizontal fracking. So since January, the DEC has been reviewing these comments. The legislature took up various measures to reduce or outright ban fracking, but none of those measures passed, in part because of the Senate Republicans, as it were. So right now, we're in this precarious period where the governor and the head of the DEC says, well, we're still reviewing those comments and finishing the ESGEIS, and the timeline is uncertain. We don't know. So that's what's been happening since January of this year. In mid-June, June 13th, actually, a plan was floated by the Cuomo administration in the New York Times to open up fracking in just a select few counties in the southern tier, five counties in the southern tier. Mm-hmm. The idea being that we would only have fracking in a few areas where they wanted it, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the truth of the matter is there is no town in New York State where the majority of people want fracking. No town that we've heard of. We've been to every town. No town that we've seen. But the gas industry, of course, has a pretty impressive PR campaign and a lot of lobbyists who are trying to convince people that areas of the southern tier, such as Broome County, Tioga, Chemung, Shenango, that those areas of the state actually want fracking. There are a few very vocal landowners who believe that they stand to make a lot of money, and they've really raised the profile of those areas, places that want fracking, whereby there are actually a majority of residents who are very much opposed to it. Nevertheless, this plan floated in the New York Times would conceivably allow permits to be issued there in this, you know, in the near future, but only in those parts of the state. Now, on that plan, the way that we see it is that's actually a cynical ploy to limit opposition while still opening up the entire state to fracking. Remember, the ESGEIS is actually a generic environmental impact statement. It wouldn't actually limit fracking to just a part of the state. More likely, those five counties are a method of trying to reduce the amount of opposition across the state by thinking that for most people this won't happen in their backyard, while actually serving as doorways to open fracking to the enormous state, the entire state, whereby they'd start fracking in those areas and then within a year or a couple of years start fracking the rest of the state, such as the Catskills in central New York and west New York, just in a matter of time. So since that plan came out, the entire environmental
community... divide and conquer is what it sounds like. Is that right?
That's exactly right. It's a political move where they figure, well, if we leave this away from most people, at least if most people think that this won't affect them anywhere near their communities, then most people won't care.
Mm-hmm.
I think, however, they've miscalculated, and the fact of the matter is that most New Yorkers are more educated than that, and they realize what we talked about earlier, which is that the impact of fracking will be felt across the board, whether it's in your backyard, your neighbor's backyard, or a backyard 100 miles or 200 miles from your home. You're still going to feel the impact at some level of fracking. It's still going to affect you, and it's still bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
When that plan came out, though, the entire environmental, public health, scientific, and business community in the state, really the entire anti-fracking movement, united to denounce the plan, to say, we're not okay with this. First of all, it's not okay to create a sacrifice zone in the state. We don't have second-class citizens in New York. No citizens should be subjected to a lab rat experiment, so to speak, when it comes to fracking. And ultimately, there are these enormous issues that haven't been addressed. And if you were listening to the best science, then there's no way that you think about going ahead with this at this time. And in fact, you would really go for a ban on fracking because the best science shows that this can't be done safely. So that's where that stood. And then actually this Sunday, and this gets the update we spoke about at the very beginning, there was yet another article out in the news talking about a plan to begin fracking in New York. So on Sunday, there was a column by Fred Lebrun in the Times Union, the Albany Times Union, where Fred has talked to a number of officials, we don't get names, in the Department of Environmental Conservation about a plan moving forward to begin fracking soon. He actually titles his column, End of the Anti-Frack World Near, as mm-hmm. if it's going to end soon. So in that, he lays out a plan where top officials are in the process of briefing selected environmental groups on a plan to begin fracking in New York, talking about the different regulations. And he says that this plan that they're now floating would be similar to what was floated in the New York Times in mid-June, which I just spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
What Fred, in his column, he talks about there being about 50 wells permitted in the first year, 100 wells permitted in the second year to be fracked, a sort of gradual build-up, and that it would also still be limited to certain areas of the southern tier, most likely. It also speaks about the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Cuomo administration partnering somewhat with the legislature in the need to pass more funding to the DEC and some regulatory measures which aren't named in this column. So the timeline put forth in this column is that it's still going to be a little while before we have the S-Guys released and some announcement made about fracking, but it's expected by Labor Day is the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we stood with this plan. Now, we have a number of comments on this plan, as you could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing is that we're ultimately all going to denounce the plan, because the basis of this, again, is this S-Guys, this review of fracking done by the DEC, which is supposed to be, as Cuomo, our governor, has promised time and time again, that the review of fracking will be based on the best science, the best information and evidence. It's not going to be based on emotion. It's all about the science. And he'll only do fracking if it can be done safely. Governor Cuomo has said that all watersheds are sacrosanct, and if there's risk of contamination, he's not going to do it. And so when we evaluate
ironic because there's been neither an environmental assessment nor a health assessment. So, you know, he made the remark early on, but he hasn't really, from what I've heard, followed through, in terms of the science. And I'm a science reporter. I mean, that's my whole background, reporting on health and science. And the science points in the other direction. There are reports of people with novel chemicals in their bloodstream in Pennsylvania, all kinds of things going on. And there isn't, the only science that I've seen has come out of, Cornell University by veterinarian Dr. Michelle Bamberger, who's really looking at how it gets into the both vegetables and the livestock supply and food and all in terms of chemical contamination. So what science is he talking about?
Well, that's exactly the question I was going to raise, is exactly what science is this being based on, because most of the independent science out there, and there have been a few studies, some from Colorado, some from Duke University, some from Cornell University, and the independent science, what's peer-reviewed by people who don't have financial gains here at stake, you know, university-oriented science, has been almost entirely conclusive that there are enormous risks with this process. There are risks of water contamination, air pollution, and a host of other problems as well, and it tends to say, there's no way you could think about going forward with this right now and think it's safe. The best science shows that this can't be done safely at this time, and we should be going back to the drawing board, not going ahead. Unfortunately, the Department of Environmental Conservation, which is tasked with studying this, has been pretty disrespectful of independent science. Much of it's actually been completely disregarded by the Department of Environmental Conservation, and then entire areas of grave concern haven't even been addressed in their study, such as you mentioned, the public health study. We would pose the question, how can you say that this can be done safely when you haven't studied the public health impacts of this process? They also haven't studied the cumulative environmental impacts. They haven't studied the negative economic impacts. They haven't looked at issues like radon, well casing failures, which is a huge concern, and the gas industry's own data actually shows significant rates of well casing failures, and when the well casings fail, that means that there's an open pathway for the contaminants, those 500-plus chemicals that get shot into the ground, many of which are carcinogenic. There's an open pathway for those chemicals to just go out into our underground water aquifers, you know, the water from which we in New Yorkers enjoy drinking, since we have still some of the best water in the entire world coming out of our ground in New York. We're very fortunate. So the gist of it here is that the DEC study has been grossly inadequate and flawed. They haven't looked at many of the key areas of concern, and they haven't included much of the key science that speaks to the problems. Additionally, they haven't really included the independent scientists. New York has hundreds of leading, renowned independent scientists who are experts in the related field, who have consistently for 4 years been knocking on the DEC's and the governor's door saying, look at this science. This science has to be included. You have to consider these concerns. Please work with us. What their response has been have been blank stares, no response. Their science hasn't been included in the review. And unfortunately, what has happened is that the DEC, while turning their backs on the independent scientists, have rolled out the red carpet to the natural gas industry and their chief lobbyists. So whereas the scientists have been ignored and turned away, the red carpet has come out for the gas industry, and much of the SGEIS actually relies on studies and information from the gas industry itself, which, of course, for anyone listening, I'm sure knows that's not a legitimate source of information. That's like the tobacco industry saying that smoking doesn't cause cancer.
Yeah, this is such a standard thing. That's how we got GMOs, is that, Monsanto did a study, found some problems, animal studies, surface problems with kidney failure and other things very early on. And then instead of following through on these initial this initial research, because, you know, you find something in an animal study, you don't throw your hands up in the air and say, well, it doesn't apply to humans. What you do is find out if it does or not, but instead the Food and Drug Administration and the USDA just declared it's substantially similar and required no study. So, I mean, this has been a pattern that we see in all areas, really, in many of them impacting health, where government is taken over by industry and either allows them to do the studies or doesn't even do studies, which we're seeing basically a bit of both in this situation.
It's interesting that you make that analogy, because it's actually spot on with fracking. You brought up Michelle Bamberger, mm-hmm. and actually her husband, Dr. Robert Oswald, who are veterinarians and researchers with Cornell University and independently as well. And they did one of the leading peer-reviewed research studies on this issue, where they looked at animal health in Pennsylvania related to cows and other animals related to fracking. And what they found were serious health issues with those animals in terms of fracking. And one of the conclusions they reached was, while this seems like a huge concern to animals, obviously these concerns most likely apply to humans as well. As any rational person would, they made the connection that if these things are causing health issues in animals, these same concerns will cause health issues in humans. Fortunately, our country doesn't allow us just to put humans out there in sort of an experimental test case, at least it shouldn't, so we don't have specific data on that yet. But it raises that concern. What are we thinking? Do we really want to turn rural New York State into a laboratory experiment on fracking?
Well, the answer depends on who's speaking, because if it's, you know, the average citizen, the answer is, you know, no, we don't. But unfortunately, if it's the government, the answer is, well, yes, we do, because, you know, unfortunately, our governor is also a presidential hopeful and has to signal to campaign contributors and other key players that he knows how to make a compromise. But as you say, or Frack Action is maintained in terms of holding forth for an outright ban rather than kind of making a compromise, is, you know, you can't make a compromise on your health. You know,
you
can't be half poisoned. At this stage,
there's no amount of cancer that's okay.
That's right.
Exactly.
Neurological ailments that are okay, you know, learning disabilities that's okay, asthma due to the bad air that you spoke about at the beginning of the program that's okay, food, you know, that instead of making us healthy can no longer be relied upon for that because of novel chemicals that incrementally day by day may build up in our bodies. All of that. So, you know, let's take a break now because in the second half hour of Connect the Dots today, John and I will be joined by Julia Walsh, who's the director of Frack Action, one of the founders, and has been a leader in this movement for a long time. So we're going to stop for some station identification, but please, listeners, stay with us. I'm Allison Rose Levy here in Connect the Dots because the second half of the show will be joined by Julia Walsh, and that's going to be terrific. Welcome back, listeners, to Connect the Dots. I'm Allison Rose Levy once again here in the second half of our show. Today, we're featuring one of the great movement organizations, organizing people in the fight to protect our water, our food, our air, our health, and our communities here in New York State, the Northeast region, and nationally and even internationally. In the first half hour, I've been speaking with John Armstrong, who's the communications director of Frack Action, a terrific group that's one of the first that's really put a powerful organizing initiative behind the movement against fracking. And now in the second half of the show, Julia Walsh, one of the founders, who's campaign director, will be joining John and me in talking further. Welcome, Julia, to Connect the Dots.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, Allison.
So we've been having a terrific conversation about, you know, the situation in New York State and the willingness of the governor to move ahead, even though, you know, in the absence of health and environmental studies, despite the fact that, you know, he's made the point at the very outset that everything would be science-based. So, you know, I'm just going to ask you a little bit of a tough question here. You know, clearly in the conversation in the first half, just to bring you up to speed, but I know you know all about this, of course, you know, the ESGEIS, which is the Department of Environmental Protection document that governs the guidelines with 60,000 public comments, many of them from brilliant scientists, from health concern, from doctors. There have been letters from doctors, from cancer survivors. You know, legal experts and economic experts have all critiqued the industry inflated projections and really painted a very dark picture. What they are claiming about fracking is really based on past experience in other states. So we're kind of opening the door and saying, you know, hey, in New York, the governor is saying we're going to do this, as if none of this had gone on and none of these concerns had been registered, public concerns, which really it's the responsibility of the executive branch to take very seriously and to address. And yet, as John has been telling us in the first half of the show, the health concerns, the environmental concerns, even the economic concerns, as we know from prior programs, have not been addressed effectively at all, and it's just kind of like a Russian roulette, wish and a prayer kind of situation here. So, you know, this is the tough question that I put to you. If the governor, New York's Governor Cuomo, is not paying attention to the science as promised, why is he doing this? Why is he proceeding with this dangerous practice?
Well, just first off to say that I think that there is some acknowledgement of the dangers and risks of fracking in the way this has proceeded since the Cuomo administration took office. I mean, first of all, we see that the New York City and the Syracuse watersheds are taken off the map, and in some ways the practice is banned from fracking in these watershed areas. I mean, I think that is an acknowledgement that there is serious concern. And I think that at this point, the governor's administration and the DEC feel that they can have it both ways, and that by limiting the amount of wells to, say, what Fred LeBrun's piece said, 50 wells for the first year, that they will get some level of accolades by national organizations for doing this on a limited and very regulated, strictly regulated scale, and that it's kind of a very scary situation in the sense that they're opening up a Pandora's box here with no exit strategy of what will happen when things really go wrong. And it's very concerning to see a governor who has methodically thought out his 10 steps ahead before he makes the first one, really moving forward with this industry, which is, by all accounts, very corrupt. And very much not accountable to anyone, including the government, including the people that are harmed. We're just seeing this real, almost like a Wild West scenario out in Pennsylvania, where no one is regulating the industry, and the governor and the DEC really need to deeply consider what is going on in the rest of the country, and that there's no way to control this once they allow the industry to begin. And I think that he and the DEC are just not clearly thinking this through. And continuously we've seen this kind of one step forward, one step back from the administration and the DEC. And, you know, I think that they believe that if they come off and appear as if they've really listened to the science and they've done this research, and now DEC Commissioner Mark Hens is touting that the S-Face is now 4,000 pages, as if these pages make us safer, as if these pages are supposed to really alleviate all the concerns that we have. If they're not, and they've really miscalculated. There's definitely been a serious political miscalculation that this can move forward, because what we're seeing is there's a growing resistance, and in no way is that resistance going to stop for quite some time. I thought that they really believed that once the announcement was made, we were all just going to pack our bags and go home and wait to get fracked. I mean, the polls right now are 50-50 by conservative pollsters, and those polls have not changed for the past 3 years. I mean, what are we going to see when the truck traffic starts, when the noise, when all these horrible effects of fracking begin to rear their ugly heads? Those polls are going to shift in our favor, and we believe that a ban is possible because this industry and this practice are so horrific that even if the governor opens up, it's not a question of if, but when he will want to walk this back and stop this practice altogether from destroying the state.
So, you know, what about what you're saying there is, I mean, the what he's put forth or what he's hinting about as he tap dances around this issue is, you know, of bringing it into New York State. What he's saying is, I'm only going to bring it to where people want it. And at the beginning of the show, John said that there are very few places where they really want it. So what gives anyone the idea that anybody wants it? I mean, do people want it? Do people in the southern tier want it? Are you speaking with people there? Is it just a few landowners who, you know, are kind of like respected in their community and they got voted onto the board and they want it and nobody, like, who wants it? Do people really want it? You know, there's an issue of, some people really want it. Well, who wants it and are they the majority of the people?
I mean, I think that the people that really want it the most are a number of shareholders and corporate CEOs of these companies. We're seeing across the board in the southern tier that there's a growing resistance. Some people are literally terrified and staying up at night scared that this is going to happen to them, but they're also organizing. And ultimately, we feel that the groups of people that really want this are very small. We haven't seen any kind of anything at all equal to the amount of resistance in the camp that wants that are pro fracking. It's just not there. And so, you know, in some sense, the industry itself and some of these landowner coalitions have painted this picture of this body of people that is much stronger and much broader than there actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the, you know, for all of their speaking about how many people want this, we just have not seen those people. What we do see is over and over again these massive PR campaigns. What we do see are, you know, millions of dollars being dropped into lobbying, and really these false promises of jobs and economic growth where we know there isn't going to be any. And they're hoping to just come in here and do what they've done in every other state. And quite frankly, they're not going to get away with it here. So, I mean, this is really...
Just to bring it back quickly to that point Julia made about these communities in the Southern Tier organizing, the title of LeBron's column in the Times Union again was "The End of the Anti-Frack World is Near." I want to point out that in the Southern Tier, when that mid-June plan was floated in the New York Times to allow fracking in certain Southern Tier communities, since then, in the last month and a half, we have seen such a marked growth in the level and commitment of activism in the Southern Tier, it's almost hard to believe. There are people coming out of the woodwork, going to their town board meetings, asking their town boards to ban fracking, going to Albany, doing press conferences and rallies, calling for a ban on fracking. The level of opposition, if this moves forward, and this is what I think the governor and some of his top officials haven't grasped, that if the green light is given to this, the number of people opposed to this practice is going to grow so rapidly. The amount of anti-fracking activism is just going to expand to a point that New York State has never seen in its activist community. What we've seen in the Southern Tier, I think, will be indicative across the state of a movement united and a movement that just grows so fast that it becomes politically impossible for this to go ahead. It will bring this movement in New York State to such a level like we've never seen before, and I think that's what hasn't been acknowledged by some of the decision makers.
Yeah, it's not like a situation like, for example, you know, just we spoke earlier in the first half of the program where we contrasted, speaking of the how we got genetically modified organisms into the food supply through inadequate study done by the vested company in question, and how that parallels the situation where, you know, we're trusting the gas and oil industry's assertions and PR statements that it's safe in the absence of independent research to verify it, and in fact in the face of independent research, which shows that it's not safe at all. So, you know, in a parallel way with GMOs, what happens is that, you know, people question them. Most people want them labeled. They want the right to make a decision about it. But then marketing research has shown that when they realize that so many foods in the grocery store contain them, they kind of become defeated and throw their hands up in the air and say, well, I give up. But the thing is, the GMO is kind of a hidden time bomb, you know, because if you eat it, if animals eat it, it's been shown to cause long-range sterility and it has a whole host of other problems, health problems associated with it. But with this, you know, the problems will be seen immediately. It won't just be like it's in the label and it's in me, but I don't know what it does. This could be, I mean, one of the concerns even is, Rachel Maddow last night on her program covered earthquake activity in Texas, you know, on an unbelievable uptick in, you know, with one after another in a region that never had any before, and lo and behold, what's happening here, but fracking is going on there with the insertion of wastewater deep into the earth to get rid of it in the aftermath of fracking. So, you know, the effects are noticeable. They can be seen. They cause uproar. You know, pollution and bad smells and high ozone levels in New York City and an increase of bad ozone days, this is data that science can track and that people can experience. So I think there's, you know, a lot of truth in what you're saying. And I just want to add for people who are already concerned or getting more concerned, hearing that it's imminent as they listen to this program, you can go to fracaction.com to let take action and let the governor know your wishes and views, and be a voice, be active, be part of a movement. Don't let other people protect your air, water, and food without your participation. You can also learn about, you know, the evolution of this, upcoming actions and opportunities to participate by going to your organization, fracaction.com. You're also on Facebook and Twitter, and people can find you there as well. So I just want to sort of throw that out there. I mean, it sounds, you know, the difference, there's a big difference between Pennsylvania, where there's just been, if for people who are, you know, have the ears to listen and the eyes to see, you know, one thing after another that's just been a horror story. When this starts happening in a site of major media like New York State, in a place where there isn't a, you know, a Republican governor who celebrated his victory at the Waldorf Astoria with the gas and oil industry, which was the case for Governor Corbett after he was elected, Governor Corbett of Pennsylvania. In this state, you know, we have a different kind of governor, one who is making compromises, who claims to want to do good, who has presidential aspirations. You know, with a whole different group of people listening and paying attention. So this could, from what you're saying, really backfire not only on the people of New York, but also on the governor's own presidential chances even, it sounds like.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And just to go back to your question before about why is he moving forward with, why is the DEC moving forward with this, there's two main things that I see. He doesn't understand the level of resistance. These aren't people who have been involved in environmental issues for their entire lives. I mean, there are people across the state right now who've never done anything, never done any community organizing, never really participated in an activist cause, who are for the first time stepping out and doing something to protect their communities against fracking. This is a very large-scale issue, and there's a large-scale resistance that's growing across the state. And quite frankly, the other piece is that there's no way to hide the impact. I mean, you can put the rig way behind some trees. You can try to, in the escalates, we talk about camouflaging the rig with nets and whatever. There's no way to hide the impact of 1,000 truck trips per frack per well. There's no way to hide the impact of bringing up all these out-of-state workers into communities that are not used to an influx. There's no way to hide the noise. I mean, there are real impacts that are seen on day one, and I think that the administration has totally miscalculated how many people in the Southern Tier are against this and aren't going to be clapping and cheering as the rigs, you know, and the trucks come in. They're going to be horrified, and they're going to be the people that we, our organization and other organizations, have speaking to the media about how horrible this is. And it will backfire for the governor's continued aspirations. And so, you know, we really are making the case that this should not be done. There is another way forward, and that is renewable energy. And it's time now to put the gun down and start moving forward on that path that really should have been embraced 30 years ago. And
exactly.
That's what we need.
So we have a solution.
The bottom line, sorry.
Go ahead, John.
The bottom line is that the road to the White House is not paved with fracking rigs.
Mm-hmm.
If this were to go forward in New York State, a national spotlight will be shown on the disaster, the inevitable health problems, and the jeopardy of the quality of life that comes with fracking, and Governor Cuomo would own that. It would, I think, be a disaster for his political career.
You know, it's not just individuals and grassroots people and people who don't want to see a rig in their neighborhood and stuff like that, but it's also businesses and companies. You know, the major insurers are basically, you know, changing their policies and saying, you know what, we're not covering any harm or risks that come about from this. You're kind of on your own, you know, has been, you know, one group has said that. Nationwide Mutual Insurance has said that. There are banks who have questioned holding mortgages on properties where this is happening. Real estate is getting involved because of declining property values. The infrastructures that you talk about, someone has to pay for them, building the roads, repairing the roads for all the truck traffic you're talking about. And that's going to, you know, redound to the taxpayers of New York State as well. So there is just a whole host of, you know, nobody, basically, you know, one group says they're going to profit by this because they're going to get the gas from these communities and, you know, kind of ship it abroad, much of it, and export it and make a lot of money for themselves and their shareholders, but a whole lot of other costs up and down the line are going to be borne by others. And those others are right near, they're not off in Wyoming, they're here near media outlets, and their suffering and what goes on there is going to be borne by everyone and is going to be heard and magnified. So, you know, it's a highly problematic thing. Let me ask you another tough question. Do you think, at this point, with the threat or the question that this may be happening, you know, by Labor Day or around that time, do you think it's that it can be stopped? I mean, do you think you do?
Yeah, so thinking, Karen, and if I were an advisor to the governor right now, I would say sit back and watch this thing implode. Mm-hmm. Why are you jumping in to a situation where just a few weeks ago, as you said, nationwide insurance is no longer going to be insuring properties where there's fracking? Mm-hmm. I mean, why jump into that situation? It's so volatile. And, of course, we're seeing some of the late-night talk show hosts coming on board now, and this is becoming a bigger and bigger issue. It's not going away, and there's no reason why this should be the answer to New York's economic woes. There's no reason why this should be the answer to our energy woes, because we know they're going to be exporting this gas. And it's really time that we have to take we need the governor to really take an honest position. I do believe the governor loves this state. His father was the governor of this state. He's been throughout this state, and to travel throughout this state is to love this state because it's beautiful and we have so much to build on. Why throw that all away for a quick fix with an industry that is not trustable, that is corrupt, and quite frankly, what they're doing to people across this country is criminal, and it will come back to haunt them? Why would the governor side with them instead of the people of New York?
Yeah, that's an outcry from the heart, really, Julia, for those of us who love New York. Now, I just want to, I'm sure our listeners are very inspired by what you've shared today with us on Connect the Dots, Julia Walsh and John Armstrong, and just want to ask you, do you have any upcoming actions that people can get involved with and participate in with you guys and the great groups of citizens who are rising to the occasion of defending our beautiful state and region? Any upcoming actions people, listeners, can participate in?
Yeah, I have three things I'd love to bring up. First, fracaction.com. Go there. You can email the governor. You can call the governor. You should definitely call the governor at least once a week. And then we do have two major actions coming up this month, actually. The first is Governor's Day at the New York State Fair. On August 23rd, a Thursday in Syracuse, is opening day of the New York State Fair, which sees about 100,000 people each day. On that Thursday, that is Governor's Day at the fair. Governor Cuomo, as has been a long tradition in New York for the governor to open the fair, will be there at the fair. And last year we were there to greet him, and this year we're organizing an action to greet Governor Cuomo at the fair and say no to fracking. Say, we love New York, you love New York. As Julia said, be our hero, ban fracking in New York. So that's Thursday, August 23rd. More information at fracaction.com or look for Frack Action on Facebook. And then the second action is actually that weekend and the following Monday is Don't Frack New York, which actually has its own website, don'tfrackny.org, which is a major action jointly in New York City and Albany from across the entire anti-fracking movement to call on Governor Cuomo to ban fracking. And part of that action is actually a pledge to resist fracking in New York, which is this wonderful pledge where people are signing a pledge committing to take whatever action they feel moved to take to stop fracking if it moves forward. So we're collecting signatures on that pledge on don'tfrackny.org and also planning those actions in Albany and in New York City, a series of trainings, movement building trainings, activism trainings over the weekend. And then on Monday, August 27th, big rallies and deliveries of those pledges and actions, demonstrations on Monday, August 27th in Albany in New York City.
Thank you so much. And so, listeners, that the way that you can get involved and, you know, make your voices heard, we're coming. You can also stay in touch with my ongoing blogging on this and other environmental and health issues on Alternet coming up soon, as well as the Huffington Post, where you can sign up to follow me and get my blogs on these and other topics, get background on this issue. You can also sign up at my website, healthjournalistblog.com, for upcoming radio show announcements, as well as my blogs, and read a whole series of blogs that I've done on this issue going back to 2009, when I was the first one covering it on the Huffington Post, and continue to cover it. Well, I just, you know, as we come down to the last few seconds of the show, I just want to thank our guests so much. Thank you, Julia Walsh. Thank you, John Armstrong, for your terrific work with Frack Action, for being on Connect the Dots with me, and bringing our listeners up to speed on so many of these important questions and fine points and broad stroke concerns concerning this issue and what it will mean for those here in the New York and the Northeast region. And I want to thank you too, listeners, for being with us today. And come and tune in again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time for Connect the Dots. We're here every week. Thank you for listening, and come join us again. Let your friends know about it, and please remember to friend me on Connecting the Dots for Health on Facebook, and you can also follow me on Twitter at Allison Rose Levy. Thanks for being with us. Tune in next week.